Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. Oh, my God. How you doing? You okay? How's everything at the place? Everything work out with that thing? Did you get that stuff in the mail that you're waiting for? Did that package come? Are you okay? Did the pills work? Is it all gone now? How's that? How's your eye? That thing with your eye, is that better? The thing with your eye? Did that cold sore calm down a little bit? Did you lose the finger? What's happening? I don't know, you guys. Come on. I'm beat up all the time. I beat myself up all the time. It's not a mental thing. It's a physical thing at this point. I've been working out and then I go up the mountain. And I do it 2-3 times a week, straight up this mountain, and then I run down. And every time I run down, I'm just playing with fire because I'm a breakable 56-year-old man. I think my bones are relatively strong, but I got a buddy of mine, only a couple years older than me, broke his hip. Classic. He did the classic hip breaking, but not just, you know, falling in the shower, getting up. He was fucking mountain biking. Mr. 58-year-old, I got to be honest with you, man. I know everybody's on this alpha kick. Every middle-aged man is shaving their head and doing the goatee and getting jacked up on the supplements. You can't impose alpha. You can't make your bones stronger than they are. You will be humbled. You will be humbled by your stupidity if you let your ego and vanity compel you. And fear, yes. Don't break yourself trying to prove that you're what? Something you weren't even when you were 25. Am I being vague? Kate Nash is on the show today. Hi, Buster. Buster, come here. Buster, get on the mic. Kate Nash is here today. And it's been a while that I've been working with Kate. And I've had people tell me I should have Kate on. But I didn't know what Kate did. And I did some research. I listened to her music. I realized she's a big pop star in the UK and a bit here. She's got a new album out right now. She's also my co-star on Glow, but I just knew her. She was the British lady. But now I know this whole story, and it's a great story. And I finally talked to Kate. She's here. Also, I'm going to be taking a vacation. We're going to keep putting up shows, but I'm going to take a vacation. And I want you people to know something. I'm going to go back to Ireland. I'm telling you, man, I got a thing for Ireland. And I'm not going to lay it all out. Yeah, I'm just taking a trip. I've pulled back a bit, as you know, over the past few years from sharing too much of my personal life with you because there's certain elements of it where I've gone through several relationships here on the mics, and each time I've talked to you less and less about them. Not because we're not friends, folks. It's got nothing to do with you. It's just that, like, there's part of me that I have to keep to myself. It's like Instagram. Same thing. It's like, what the fuck are people doing on Instagram? Here's what I'm telling you. I've pulled away. You know, I've pulled back from Twitter. I've gotten rid of my Facebook page altogether. I've kind of shut some of the light out of my personal life here on this podcast. And now Instagram, I've been more active on Instagram, but basically just letting people know what's up, checking in, that kind of stuff. The shows, the cats, I can be candid about the cats. They're not going to get upset by not feeling that they can represent themselves on the mics here. But Instagram is like this whole other thing. Like, I do check Instagram. I follow a few people. I don't know who to follow. I can't follow too many people because I don't get too many people in my feed. But I've had this issue with Instagram and Twitter, to be quite honest with you, where, look, there is plenty of people I know in my life that I don't see every day or even hardly at all. But I know them for years and I'm in the same community, comedians, people I work with in show business. And some I follow them on Twitter. And on Twitter, it just gets to the point with some people, it's like, how many posts are you going to do? When is this not just some weird cry for help? I mean, what is the impulse? If it's not just a sort of like, hey, I'm doing this, what's up? Maybe do a couple of jokes, but some people seem to be having this one side conversation where they present themselves as however they want to present themselves, whether it's funny or just earnest or concerned or like on the pulse of what's happening or outraged or whatever it is. You know, when somebody posts more than 10, 15 times a day, it's like, are you okay? What? I know you, but I didn't know you to be so annoying and desperate somehow. And then Instagram takes it to this whole other fucking level where it's just, I've had to unfollow people on Instagram because I like them as people. But if I follow their Instagram feed, I start to resent them and I get mad at them. And it's almost like they keep barging into my door. Like I'm just trying to have a life. And every four or five posts, a person who I used to like is going, hey, man, remember me? Look what I'm doing now. Look, I got a hat. Look at that hat I got on. Hey, look who I'm standing with. Look at my children. Hey, look at this is the thing I'm doing out in the world, and I want you to know that I'm doing it. And I get to a point where I'm like, all right, you know, I'm glad everything's going good and that you're excited to share it, but I can't do it anymore. And I'm sure people have had that experience with me. But why are you doing it? What is the need to do it? I'm trying to explore what is my need. I'm like, well, I got something I kind of want to say. Like with Instagram, I just want to check in with people, tell them what I'm doing, say hi, how's the day going? And this is the podcast that's coming up. And occasionally my cats. And that's fun, but that's it. Once every few days, really. Twitter, I don't post at all, hardly ever. And it's, you know what? It's a relief. I've gotten some of my life back and it's mine. I can have it. I don't need to share it. Too many Instagram posts. That's all I'm saying. Take it down a notch. Did I tell you about that thing? I went and hosted that Silver Lake Conservatory of Music benefit the other night. Again, third year in a row. And I got to be honest with you, not an easy gig. Not a fucking easy gig, but I do it for the kids. It's Flea from the Chili Peppers. He started the place and it's a great thing. It's a great thing. Given that so many of the public schools aren't teaching music anymore, and music is very important, whether you turn out to be a musician or not, learning an instrument, building a relationship with an instrument, having that to express yourself or to comfort you or to entertain people, it's great. And as, you know, as the heat rises and the apocalypse is upon us, we're going to need more traveling minstrels to visit the sort of ever-shifting migrant camps around the country to where water is. And they're going to be nice. It's going to be nice to have somebody, you know, constructing and writing and entertaining with a few sad songs of the trek to find water in the new world. Yeah, it's going to be essential. So you might want to think about getting your kid onto an instrument so he'll have something to do when the grid breaks down and you have to go organic and just be on woodwinds or handmade instruments of different kinds, perhaps from garbage and whatnot. But it'd be nice to have a basic understanding of a musical instrument when you have to build a musical instrument out of junk and garbage to travel with in these wagon trains that are going to be happening from broken down Teslas and horse pulled carriages that were once motorized cars. How do I know all this stuff? It's coming to me right now. I'm just a vessel. I'm just a channel. That's all. I'm just saying maybe learn an instrument for the end of the world so people don't have to cry all the time and there can be sing-alongs. But anyway, so I'm hosting this thing and it's difficult because it's a big room of fairly rich people. And like last year, it was great because I was with Randy Newman and I got to eat dinner with him. The year before that, it was Katie Lang. And this year, the Chili Peppers always play, but they have a guest. This year it was Eddie Vedder. And I open the show. I don't do much material. I just, you know, kind of keep things going, keep a through line. Then at some point I do material, but it kept getting pushed up this year. Like, you know, I was just going to do a few minutes. I knew it was going to be terrible in the sense that I was wasn't really going to be able to get the audience to focus or listen to me. And it kept getting pushed up to the point where it was like, all right, I was going to do it before the Chili Peppers performed. And then they're like, why don't you do it after, in between the Chili Peppers and Eddie Vedder? And like, if I'd gone up right after the Chili Peppers, I would have held the audience. But they're like, just wait until Vedder, they get him set up. And I'm like, holy shit. So like, now it's coming down to it. They've set the stage for Eddie Vedder. I don't know Eddie Vedder. And they're like, okay, just go up and do your 3 to 5. And it's like ridiculous. No one's paying attention. I rose above it and I wouldn't let it be embarrassing. And I told them, I'm like, this is great. I'm glad I volunteered for this. I'm glad I volunteered for this tanking. God damn it. So I'm just up there and I'm doing a few jokes. I'm getting nothing really. And I look over at the side of the stage and Eddie Vedder is dying laughing. And I'm like, don't do that, Vedder. Do not laugh at my failure. Do not laugh at my pain, Mr. Vedder. But I fucked myself because that means that they knew that he was waiting to go on. So I had to end my act there. It kind of worked out. And I brought Vedder up, took a couple shots at him before he got up there. And then he was very kind of like, hey, Mark, I wasn't laughing at your failure. I was laughing at your courage, man. I was laughing with you. It's very courageous. I'm like, oh, God damn it. That just made it worse. Play your songs. It was my mistake. Who the fuck thinks that going up in between two of the biggest rock acts of the last 30 years at a small venue event where people are eating dessert is a good idea? Who volunteers for that? Me. I did it. I volunteered for it. Kate Nash is here, and it's quite a story. Her latest album, Yesterday Was Forever, is available wherever you get music. You can also watch her in all 3 seasons of GLOW, streaming now on Netflix. And it was great to talk to her and get to know her. I've been working with her for 3 years. It's never too late, folks. This is me and Kate Nash.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
It's nice to see you.
Nice to see you too, Mark.
I mean, we go through periods where we see each other almost every day.
Yeah.
It's not like we're hanging out. We're working.
Yes, we're very serious.
And it's taken me this long to have you on the show, even though people are like, why don't you have Kate on? She's a big star in music. And I'm like, is she though?
You're like, who is she?
Yeah, who is she? What does she do? Where does it happen?
Yeah.
But it turns out you are kind of a big star. It took me this long to do
he
the
just
research.
Didn't believe him.
No, I believed it, but what? I'm an old man. And I didn't watch the documentary because I thought it would affect our conversation.
Okay.
What is it called again?
Underestimate the Girl.
Now, that documentary was, you set out to just, it was supposed to be like just this sort of like, we're going to follow this pop star around.
Yeah.
And do a documentary about her journey in America.
So it was like, yeah, I got approached. I didn't set out to make a documentary. I wasn't like, I think it's time for me to make a documentary. I just got
you
asked.
Didn't? It wasn't.
No, it wasn't my
self-generated.
No, it wasn't self-generated.
Yeah.
But I was like, I just moved to LA, and I was saying yes to anything that I was just saying yes to stuff.
This was like 2014. Oh, okay.
14, yeah. And
when did we start doing GLOW?
16.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so someone approaches you, I want to make a doc about you.
Yeah.
Because I know who you are. Mark Maron doesn't,
yes.
But I do.
Yeah. I
and
did.
Who was that?
It was Amy Goldstein, yeah. and this woman, Anishka, and they we had a hairdresser in common. And she did my hair for Coachella, and then I'd done this like crazy like vagina sculpture show at Coachella.
You did a vagina sculpture show?
Yeah. Like, well, I like made these vagina sculptures, and it was like...
Like giant vaginas?
Yes.
But they were clearly vaginas. There was no...
I don't know if clearly is the word I would use, but Vagina interpretations. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So, but there was no denying they were vaginas.
Yes.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
There was a guy named Jonathan Ames.
Yeah.
He's a writer. He did this. I think he did a character called Mangina that was a man in a vagina suit.
I like that.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, sort of. It's sort of a reaction to toxic masculinity, I think.
Right,
an inversion of it. All right, so
nice.
Same hairdresser, vagina sculptures.
Yes.
For Coachella.
Yes. So they just heard about it and they were looking to work on a new project. So
they're like, this artist seems interesting.
Yes, and they wanted to film with me. And we just started filming. And they didn't really know at first. It was like, oh, this may be a TV show. This maybe we'll just see. And I'm like, okay, I'll just do whatever because I don't know what I'm doing here.
And you're new to town.
New to LA.
You want to crack America?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah, you're going to make it in the USA.
Gonna make it in the biz.
Yeah, yeah.
And we start filming. And they also said stuff, you know, they were like, well, you know, documentaries sometimes you have to kind of like create scenarios and
yeah, we're gonna get you in trouble.
Yeah.
So you emote properly.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't think that's necessary because I just like drama's around.
Yeah.
I'm sure that something weird is gonna happen.
But shit was not hitting the fan yet.
Not yet. I mean, shit is always hitting the fan in some way.
But at this point though, they were just sort of interested because you were kind of like on the rise, right?
The States. I had been dropped by my record label
already.
And I had like continued through that and kind of kept afloat.
But did they know that when they asked you?
Yeah.
They did.
I was kind of like making it on my own. Mm. You know, like I'd survived being dropped by a record label.
Right.
And it was kind of like, what do I do now?
Well, okay. So that's, and that's when the doc sort of takes a turn. Like, you know, it was supposed to, like from what I understand, it got a little more kind of personal and a little more raw than was anticipated. It was supposed to be sort of an ascent.
Yeah.
Was the hope.
Well, that's always the hope.
Right, she's going to land on her feet. She's on her
own.
Well,
is it the hope? I feel like documentary makers, maybe they kind of are secretly hoping for a little bit of a descent as well.
Sure, well, they want to, well, either that or they want people to watch it and go like, well, I don't know who's at fault here.
Yeah.
Who's the bad guy? Am I the bad guy? So let's go back because I've been listening to music today.
Okay.
I got into it. Seems like the new record or 2018, the last record.
Yeah.
You're like rocking harder.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. I think like 2013 was like my angry record.
That was, so the first record, right. The first record's 2007.
Yeah, Made of Bricks.
Well, that was, okay. So let's go back to that because I don't even know what kind of music it is, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's sort of like, my second wife listened to Lily Allen, and I know there's a British poppy thing that's sort of dancey, but kind of fun.
Yeah.
And it's that area, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I feel like there was a scene in London happening at the time where it was like British artists being British.
Uh-huh.
Because there was so much before that was like even British artists singing in American accents because everyone, you know, like that was kind of a thing.
It felt like a lot of the British pop, you know, power pop from the 80s to me, there was some of that in there.
Mm.
And maybe in the later record, there's a little Roxy music in there. I don't have that, you know, like I could hear British music in it, Squeeze.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that all in there?
Yeah. I mean, I just played the piano. And so that's what I had as my outlet.
Maybe it's just because you're British. I just associate it with every British thing that I've
ever
heard.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up listening to like the Beatles. My parents listened. I loved Nilsson so much.
Harry's pretty great.
Janice, I love Harry. And Janis Joplin. And I had like a lot of good music around me as a kid.
You're screaming on this record too, a little more.
Oh, I thought you meant right now.
No, but on this record. It seems to be yours.
Yeah, screaming kind of came into my life in like 2010.
Oh.
Well, not in my personal life.
But in the record, in the...
Yeah, I just kind of had a lot of anger after my first record because of all the sexism I experienced, like, in the industry.
But the record was huge, and I imagine it was huge with a lot of girls.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
It feels like that the first record was a number one record in the UK, right?
Yeah.
In Europe.
Yeah.
And just by the nature of the music, I'm like, well, this isn't necessarily speaking to me. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I can see how girls would be like, yes.
Yeah.
this is my heart.
It was like identity. Well, it got called, one of the things that I love about that record is that it got called like in a way, at the time, it was being reviewed in a sort of derogatory way too, of like, it's like a teenage girl's diary.
Oh.
And I was like, that is the best thing you could ever be.
Well, that's such a like a weird, dumb British commentary. Like, but you know, why is she being so honest and telling us this
Why
stuff?
Is she a teenage girl?
Yeah.
No one cares about them except everyone in the world is trying to market everything towards them.
Right.
We don't want to know how they feel. We just want to use them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just run money through them.
Yeah.
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 But how did the first album come about? And when did you start doing this? Where'd you grow up? Let's ask a lot of questions.
Okay.
I have no sense of England. And when I have British people on, I always feel stupid because I can't do what I usually do, which is like, oh, you're from New Jersey? I know New Jersey.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to tell me things. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to have to ask you dumb questions. So where'd you grow up there?
Harrow. North Harrow.
Harrow?
Yeah.
Is that in London?
Yes, it is. Northwest London. It's near Wembley, kind of.
Near Wembley Stadium?
Yep.
And it's, is that a, what kind of neighborhood is it?
It feels suburby. There's all these like zones, like outer zones of like, you know, what zone 1 to 6, and it feels kind of suburby there.
Which zone were you in?
5.
Wow, zone 5.
Yeah.
This sounds like a weird dystopic future movie. Yeah. I didn't know that.
I lived in zone 5.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, lucky you weren't in zone 6, right?
Or zone 7.
No, that's way.
Don't
want
to be there. I went to a school when I was 16 called the Brit School.
What did? Were your parents like? What'd they do?
My mom's a nurse.
Like a nurse.
Yeah.
At a hospital.
Yeah.
Huh.
What other kind of nurse is there?
Well, there's nurses that work in doctors' offices. There's specific types of nurses.
My mom has worked in like so many different areas of nursing, and she's very strong and good nurse. And she was working, she's worked in like a cancer unit, like when she had cancer and stuff like that.
Oh,
she's like
wow.
Very strong. And then she worked in a hospice for many years.
For people on their way out?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I know.
So she understands it.
Yes.
She gets the transition. She understands life.
Death is like a big thing in my life, I feel like, because
really?
Of that. I just feel like...
Why? Because she'd go to work and she'd come home and be like,
so many people died
Mr.
all the
Johnson's
time.
Gone.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it took shorter time than we thought.
Yeah.
And that was just her job.
And you just, every day would hear these different stories and you'd kind of get to know these people because she'd be talking about her work and then go through all these stories. I mean, I remember stories of like... this couple getting married in the hospice and like they knew that she was going to die and then she died. I mean, just all these emotional stories.
I don't know why I'm being like, oh God, like it's a horror show. Like to me, I think it would behoove all of us to have some sort of acceptance or deeper understanding of that process.
Yeah.
Right? Because it's inevitable. It's one of the few things. It's the only...
It's like...
inevitable.
It's the main thing that we try to deny. And
right.
That's like definitely happening.
Definitely
for
happening.
For sure.
And we're all so scared of it because, you know, who knows? We don't want to be in pain.
I'm not scared of dying myself.
Really not?
I mean, I'm scared if it's like violent and horrible.
Yeah.
But I'm more scared of like everyone I know dying and that just being really sad. They're going to die. Everyone I know is going to die. It's so sad. But it's also, it's just like, that's fucking the world, this planet. It's like everything.
It's the way it is. Yeah.
I think if we like definitely kind of accepted that more, then there'd be healthier people.
So did you find that early on when your mom was doing this, did she tell you? I mean, was there any, like, I would assume that it's sort of dark, but if she was acting like it's just the way it is.
She's very practical and it's like no bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
And she really hates passed away or we've lost them.
What did she say? Died?
Died. She's like, somebody has died. And you can't, as a nurse, use language that's like trying to dress it up in any other way. Like, they didn't pass away anywhere. They died.
They die. It's like doctors. Like, it's cancer. It's not good.
Yeah.
And the prognosis is what it is. You can try, but...
But I mean, there's just, I don't know. I remember like my granny dying and I remember the way my mum talked about that. And like we were all there. But she's Irish as well, my mum. So there's like such a different...
Oh, they're pretty matter of fact.
An Irish funeral in comparison to an English funeral, which I've had...
What is the difference?
It's so much more alive at an Irish funeral.
Really?
English funeral is like awkward, silence, depressing, sad.
Yeah.
And like stiff.
Yeah.
And just, you feel very depressed.
Let's get it done with.
You're like, this is such a fucking sad way to go out.
Yeah.
That's why I feel at an English funeral.
No
I'm
matter
like,
what
fuck
it is.
This.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas an Irish funeral, it's like, fucking let's do this. You yeah. know, like you sit and you cry and yeah. you're like vocal and people have things to say and they and you laugh. Someone left my granny's funeral like cackling with laughter to my mum and said, I've had the best time. And then they were like, oh God, I'm so sorry. And she was like, no, that's exactly what she would have wanted.
A celebration
you know?
Of someone's life.
I just remember like crying and laughing and crying and laughing and like talking and being loud and like eating and like
yeah.
just doing that for like a week.
Well, I think out of any culture, sure, you know, I think the Irish sort of know that yeah. the shit's going to get bad. Yeah. That, like, not only are we going to die, but probably going to happen sooner than you want it to.
And yeah.
what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I love the Irish personally.
Me too.
Your dad's English?
Yeah, yeah.
What's he do?
He's a systems analyst, which is, I don't really understand my dad's job very much.
It's no
like,
one does.
He just works like
80% of the people that I talk to don't understand their father's job.
He just looks at a screen and it's like coding. Mm. And he's like,
does he love it?
I don't think he loves it. He's just really good at what he does and he works really hard for his family.
Oh, that's nice.
He's a very hardworking guy. He doesn't love it.
Yeah. How many?
He's good at it.
How big's a family?
I have 2 sisters.
Older?
One older, one younger.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm the difficult middle child.
Is that standard?
We're all pretty difficult, actually.
Is that true?
I just get, yeah, I think so.
Why do you think? I don't know if I've heard that. I don't have any kids.
I think.
And I'm not a middle child, but I like the idea.
Of being in the middle?
Of the middle child being difficult.
I think every child thinks they have it the worst, but I feel like the middle child is like, well, the older one got to do everything
right.
and didn't have a strict rules because yeah. you didn't know. And then the younger one gets away with it because you can't be bothered by the time you get to the younger one. So the middle one gets the like, we've done this before, so we know how to be strict. And then by the time they get to the last one, they're like, oh, I can't be bothered.
Right.
So they just get away with everything.
Oh, I get it. So is it weird having a mom as a nurse? Because like when you guys get sick, she's like, all right.
I feel like it's equipped me when I go into a hospital now yeah. and I have to be there either for someone else or myself. I know the questions to ask. I know how to be demanding.
Really?
I know that you have to do that. There's certain yeah. things you have to look out for yourself. Because
yeah. Did you go to the hospital a lot when you were a kid?
I had a heart condition when I was 16.
Oh, I think I saw that in the research somewhere.
Yeah, in the research file.
A heart condition?
Yeah, I had heart surgery. I had like a tachycardia thing.
Tachycardia, so it went.
It went.
Oh, no shit.
It got stuck on a loop, yes. Yeah,
so really?
To burn off the loop.
Really?
Yeah.
Like that fast, like cocaine fast?
Yeah, it felt horrible. Oh. Yeah, it's like here.
And in your throat?
Yeah. And it got like. I have asthma as well, so.
Asthma too, huh?
Yeah. Poor me. So one of the side effects for taking the drugs for asthma can be like a sped up, like palpitations, right?
Oh.
So when I would complain of having a fast heartbeat,
yeah.
my mom didn't really, she was like, oh, it's just
probably
like a side
medicine,
effect.
Medicine, yeah.
But then one night she like felt it and was like, we need to go to the emergency room right now.
It's a lot faster than I thought.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So,
and how old were you when that happened?
17.
But was that like?
The surgery was 17.
But was it like any fear that you would die?
Yes. Yes, there was, and I just didn't really know what to do with that at 17.
What, because of the surgery you could die?
It was like, the doctor was like, here's the statistics that like when you have the surgery, it could go wrong, or you could have a stroke, or you might end up with like a pacemaker, and here's what's going to happen if you don't have it. And then like, these are the percentages, and you should make the decision. And I was like, I'm 17. I don't know how to make any decisions.
Did your mom step in there?
Well, it ended up actually getting so bad that I had to have the surgery. So that was kind of a relief because
oh
I was like,
God.
At least
so
I didn't
had
have
open
to make
heart
the
surgery?
Decision. Actually, I had this crazy surgery where they kept me awake and they put 3 tubes in the top of like one thigh and 2 tubes in the top of the other. And they pushed them through me whilst I was awake and like drugged me and stuff.
Oh, they pushed the tools?
Like these tubes, so
yeah,
I could
okay,
feel
tubes.
Like these tubes
in your veins.
It's a very strange feeling.
In your artery, right?
Yeah, going through the stomach, like, and then they like stuck this laser through, and they lasered off, so you can
Whoa,
feel it like burning in your chest.
Come on,
yeah, pretty cool, right?
Oh, did you write a song about it?
I didn't actually.
Hmm.
I know. I never pieced it together into my creative. I didn't think about how this affected me until recently.
Really?
I brush that thing off quite quickly.
Well, because you got through it. And yeah, I guess like if you survive something, if it didn't cause you, well, I don't know, maybe it's a PTSD thing.
Yeah.
Right?
I think I just didn't acknowledge any of those like mental health things till like late in my 20s.
What other ones?
Like OCD and anxiety and all of that. Like I just was like.
You have real OCD?
Yeah.
Well, how does it manifest itself?
It's like tied into the anxiety and it will just be like controlling me with things I have to do. Mm. And
I do that.
Yeah.
But you don't have a paralyzing kind of like you got to touch the doorknob 5 times.
And, yeah, I have that.
Oh, you do?
But I controlled it in a very strange way with becoming vegetarian.
Okay, because that's a control thing?
I had no idea. This is all like stuff I've realized later, but I got this bunny rabbit when I was like 23.
How old are you now? Is that, you
know, how old am I? 32.
Okay.
I was like 23 or something.
I don't know if that's rude to ask, but you seem, you can handle it.
I'm fine with the truth, Mark. We're all going to die.
Yeah, I know.
That's what we've covered my death.
Good. We accept it. Oh, I don't want to go yet though. A couple more years.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
At least a couple.
30, 23, bunny.
Right. So I get a bunny and I like, just underestimated how much a bunny, like any pet, is just like being. And I just kind of fell in love with her. And I was like, oh my God, I thought this was just going to be like a bunny. Yeah. And she's like my child and I'm obsessed with her. And then she had to have this surgery because like, you know, I got her neutered, spayed or whatever.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, it's really risky because she's a small bunny. So like to put her under is risky. And I was like,
yeah.
And I started like having these meltdowns about that. And
about the bunny going under?
Yeah. And so then all my OCD things were like, you have to do them because if you don't, she won't make it through the surgery.
It does not sound like your mother's fortitude rubbed off on you at all.
It didn't. I have zero logic. Zero logic.
There was no acceptance around the bunny. This bunny.
No, she couldn't go.
Yeah.
So everything was controlled by that and it got pretty crazy. And I was like, kind of, it was like the main thing in my life.
The bunny.
And just all the rules of like stuff I had to do. I'd be like, can't leave the house. And I'd be like, I have to go back because I didn't do this and I didn't fold that and I have to do it in that same way. I have to do them.
Now, where were you in your career when that was happening?
I was in an interim period in between my first and second record.
Okay,
I think I was like writing my second record.
So what happened with the bunny?
So she had this. So I had an argument like the night before the surgery with a friend who was vegetarian who was like, you need to be vegetarian.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I don't. I like animals, but I can still eat meat. And then the next day I woke up and I was like, if I don't eat any animals, then she's going to be fine. And it was like a deal that I did.
Some magical thinking.
The way you said that.
it's an ongoing conversation with me. I like to call it.
It was like disgusted, but so profound.
Well, it's like it's a theme with me right now.
Is it?
Yeah. But I think that anxiety and OCD that, you know, mystical thinking. I've had that before myself,
yeah,
I try to call it out. But that's what that was.
But it helped. So what I did then was like,
right. It's like because you don't have you don't have a religion in place.
No.
Right. So there you go. You're inventing one as you go along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I did this deal, and then anytime and I'm vegan now, and I actually like I'm very happy with my life choice. That you know, at first I was like craving meat, and I wanted to eat meat, and it was.
But
like
you wanted that bunny to live.
I wanted her to live, so I had to not eat it.
Did it live?
Yes.
Is it still alive
yes,
now?
Yes, she is. Can you believe
oh my
it?
God.
Magical thinking, huh?
Great. Why don't you apply it to a bigger thing? If you've got this power. Fix everything.
I will.
Thank you. That's the next record. Just call it magical thinking and solve the world's problems.
Okay. I'll try.
So, well, that's interesting. But so, because I imagine with the stress of the first record and the expectations.
Yeah.
So let's go back to that. Like, how does this record happen? I mean, were you always doing music or?
Yeah, I played piano as a kid and I always sang and I knew I wanted to.
You play guitar too though, right?
I started playing guitar when I was about 17.
Mm.
But yeah, I just like I always wanted to do that. So I was also like sidelined studying theater and I wanted to go to drama school and then I got rejected from all universities and drama school.
Really?
Yeah. And so that's when I was working like...
Fuck them, right?
Fuck
you're on
them.
Television. You're on TV, man.
I'm a wrestler now.
Yeah, fuck them.
And I was working in a fast food restaurant and I just like decided that I needed to do something because I was so bored. and I was so
fast food restaurant.
Yeah,
I'm on. I don't want people to sound like it's not. You know, job's a job.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds. It always sounds a little brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
The repetition of it.
Yeah, I mean, I found working in like a shop worse actually.
Because no one's coming in.
Because it's just so like, I don't know. There's something about the way that you're like treated in a shop like that.
Like, well, yeah, because like, you know, people have to come in there and make choices. With fast food, it's like, yeah, you know what we got.
Yeah.
It's right up there.
How many do you want of them?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like, well, this is a fade.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Yeah. Do you want the shirt?
I think I got brought in for like a meeting about a clothes hanger once.
Ugh,
and I was like, this is really the worst, lowest point for me.
That's
like,
terrible. Retail? Rough.
Yeah, retail's rough. Really rough. I was like afraid of doing a gig, but I became so bored that fear was interesting at least. So I could like go, well, at least I'm going to feel scared and that'll be fun.
Oh, so you were so bored and you wanted to do music.
Yeah, but I was too scared.
Too scared. Like, but then it was one of those things where it's sort of like, but that could never end.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what did you do?
So I printed off. Yeah. I burnt a CD with like my demos I'd been making on my laptop. And I took it to the local like bar, indie like club.
Yeah.
And I said, I want to play a gig. And I started a music MySpace account. Oh, and I'd broken my foot at this point. So it was like, I had all this time to like work on like the music and the.
How'd you break your foot?
Fell down the stairs.
In your house?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so then it was kind of a thing where it was like, I like making deals with. Yeah. Someone or myself as
another,
soon as
it's another rabbit deal.
No, it was like as soon as my foot is healed, I'm gonna do my first gig. Like that's what's gonna happen.
Oh yeah.
So then I did that, and then I just played that first show, and I was like, this is the best thing ever.
So you started the MySpace account because I remember MySpace, and I was on there, but I never really got the hang of it. It seemed like a lot of maintenance. It wasn't as good for. Comedians as it was
for
musicians.
It was amazing for music.
Is it still out there?
No, it's completely, they've lost everything actually. But I think that it is the like the freest thing that we've ever had for like music, like careers.
As a musician, it was as honest as the internet could be because you could just put it up there.
There was no sponsors.
Right.
There was no one in control. Literally, kids were just listening to stuff.
And there wasn't other platforms.
Yeah, and there was
really?
I got emailed by lawyers, record labels, managers, all came through DMs on MySpace.
Because they liked your music? Because it was picking up?
Because I was getting loads of plays and I was playing shows in London and they were getting... It was like a hyped period of time for me. So
the first... Phase one was you made the CD. Phase two was you put it up on MySpace. Mm. And then how many songs did you put up there?
You could put four. At first, you could only put four.
And so you put four up and it started to happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you could actually... Because it was starting to happen, you could say like, well, I'm playing at this place. So... They would go see you.
People would start coming, yeah.
Oh.
And I had really good friends as well that were coming. Like, I think one of the key things in music scenes is friends jumping on top of their bands. Because if you go to a show and it's so hot, like the first few shows are so exciting because there's a bunch of people really keen supporting this person.
Yeah.
Then other people get involved because of that. I think all bands that I like can think of, they're like, that I know of at sort of in this period of time is like all their friends were going. It became like a really fun night out that everyone just wanted to be at, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how scenes start. I think.
So you were part of a scene?
Yeah. Like the sort of 2007, there was a lot of like UK artists doing like a very British storytelling style of music and like playing gigs.
Are there other ones that people would know?
Like Jamie T.
Yeah.
Like Lily Allen, Adele, like, you know, Florence, like all these
people. Do you know Adele?
I went to school with Adele.
You did?
Yeah.
Where?
She was in the year below me at Brit School.
Really? Did you know her?
Yeah, yeah. I knew Adele. Everyone kind of knew Adele because she was always like an amazing singer and like singing around the school and stuff. So,
you know, I don't know a lot of her music, but I know that I like her.
That's all you need to know then.
I don't know why. I mean, I'm not alone, obviously, but I've heard her sing a few times, but it's sort of one of these things like, do I want to investigate that more? I don't know.
Okay.
I'm like, there was a moment there I'm like, I have to get all of Adele's records. But I
for
did
the room
it.
Downstairs.
Yeah, did it. Exactly. All right, so that's all going on and you're kind of part of that. You're in it or on the fringes of it or
yeah.
it's happening
we were
on all
like,
levels.
We were all like at the same shows.
Yeah.
I mean, there's more people I haven't
Did you know
in,
Lily Allen?
The Kooks as well. Yeah.
You knew
her? I didn't know her like really well, but it was like we knew each other.
Yeah.
Like everyone kind of knew each other because you're just like young people playing the same venues and like, you know,
right.
Lily Allen like had me in her top eight and stuff at the beginning and stuff like that. And
so you're all supporting each other.
Yeah, it was it was communal feeling. It was like a community, which is really nice.
And so the first you released Foundations as a single?
I released a 7-inch that had a song Caroline's a Victim and Birds, and it was like a vinyl.
That was the first one.
Yeah, and then I released, and I was that my first gig was 2006. It was like April 13th, 2006, and then Foundations came out in like I don't know what month, but June,
so you didn't have a
June-ish
record.
2007.
But you didn't have a record. You had to put together a record, right? The first two songs were two of the four songs you put on MySpace.
Yeah, and then I had like eight songs. I mean, you had to have eight songs to play a set list. So it was like I had about eight songs, nine songs. And then I recorded the record and then it came out in like, I think it was like the summer of 2007. Mm. And then that blew up. So it was like a quick, turnaround for me. And it was very strange.
And I listened to the stories, Foundations. That seemed like a difficult relationship.
Mm.
Were you writing from your life or were you just...
No.
Okay.
I wasn't in a relationship.
Oh.
I mean, I was in relationships, but not really.
Oh.
But like, I was always like, I feel like I was just storytelling, you know?
Sure.
I didn't have like...
Some experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's like, if you're also, you know, like, I was studying theater and just interested in like life.
I get it. Yeah, I mean, like, it took me a long time to realize that when people write songs, it's not all about them.
Yeah, not always.
It kind of devastated me. I want when I hear a song, like I listen to Jason Isbell or Nick Lowe or somebody, and I'm like, that's not you? And they're like, no, we make up people. What?
But sometimes it's you, and sometimes it's not. And sometimes there's like little things that are you.
Of course, yeah, because you're writing it.
Yeah.
So the first record was called what? Made of Bricks?
Made of Bricks, yeah.
And it was huge.
Yeah.
Number one?
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. So now you've got an agent, you've got a label, you got a manager. Got a lot of people taking your money.
Yeah.
People know you on the street.
Yeah.
You're like a star.
Right.
Doing big gigs.
Yeah, 10,000 capacity.
Come on, just to see you?
Yeah.
10,000 people are like, we're going to see Kate.
Yeah, I sold out Hammersmith Apollo,
What?
Yeah.
That's great.
I mean, it was like very overwhelming. I think I...
How old were you?
19.
Wow.
Something, I don't know. Around that age. And I think it was a little much for me then.
I think so. Did you have a combo together or was it just you on piano? Did you put a band together?
I had a band, I had a band.
Drummer?
Yeah, drummer, bass, like keys, like
so real
guitar.
Band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of fun traveling the world together, don't get me wrong, but it did get a little much.
In what way?
Like, I just remember I just got worked like a donkey.
By the label.
Yeah, and toured like crazy. And I was not in hands that were like, I didn't think anybody asked me, how are you? Are you okay? Like there's things I should have, like there was no time off. I would go on like a 6-week tour on a bus in America. And
you're
then
veganing?
Jump.
You're was vegan there? Yet?
No, I wasn't vegan yet.
Oh, yeah. So you're eating shitty?
Eating shit food across America.
Drugs?
Not really.
Mm.
Like drinking a lot though.
Yeah.
And then.
So you toured the States because it was the record big here?
It wasn't big. I mean, America's so big. It's hard. Yeah. Like, it wasn't like big, but I was like selling out shows and paying to like 3,000 people.
That's great. This is 2007.
2007 into 2008. And I just kind of like got exhausted. It was just like pure exhaustion and like felt insane and burnt out. I remember my last show of the whole 2 years.
Yeah.
I didn't think I could even sing. I remember just being like, how do I get through this? And just wanting to like die afterwards. Just
And that's when you went home and bought the rabbit?
Yeah.
So were you having a, like when did it, how did it stop?
I just got, 2 years is kind of as much as you can really tour something, really. Yeah.
Okay, so it had a natural
It came to
life.
You do like two summer sort of festivals and you've toured everywhere twice. You can't really like go and do another tour, you know.
Once a year,
a new
right,
album.
Right, gotta go make a new record.
Yeah, 18 months.
So they knew that.
Yes, so they're like, go make a record. And I'm like, I don't even know if I want to make music ever again. I hate everything.
Right.
I don't even know.
Who's pressuring you, the label?
No, there wasn't... so much. I mean, looking back, I'm kind of like, it's just weird to think how young I was around all these older men and none of them were like, how you doing? Or do you need some like mentor or like, how can we help you? It was more like, I think I just was like, I need to take time to just decide what I want to do. Mm. And I need to find that, feel like this is mine again, because I felt a bit like, I don't know if you've had this, but when I, the first experience of doing it, just doing the same interviews, and I mean, what did I have more to say? I had one record, played the same songs every night.
Yeah.
I was young. Yeah. I didn't have like so like, much more that I could give.
Sounds like hell after a little while.
Yeah. And then you start to feel like, I was like, do I even like music? Yeah. I think I'm lying. I don't even like it.
I have that conversation about everything every day.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what am I doing?
Yeah,
do
like, this, this anymore? Do I? Who am
but
I?
Then,
I'm
and here
fake.
We are doing it. Yeah. I have those conversations all the time.
Yeah.
But then like, what's the alternative? Just sitting around going like, this is much better doing nothing.
The worst is like, I think worse than that is when you're really struggling. I've had the worst feeling I feel like I had was when I was like, the world is almost like screaming at me to stop doing this.
Yeah.
Nothing's going
music.
Right. Yeah, nothing's happening.
Yeah.
No one's really supporting you, but you're going to keep doing it anyway, aren't you?
Well, you get too far in.
You're not going to give up because it's like...
But give up what? It's just like, what are you going to do? Go back to the fast food place?
But I mean, there's other options, isn't there?
But not in my mind.
Not in my mind either, but that's the thing. It's like, you're not a normal person.
Right.
And you're like, you have a dream and you have like a passion and you have... Yeah. Art, and you care about something.
Yeah, or you've just been doing it a long time.
Right, you don't want to admit that you do, but you do.
Well, no, it's like I chose something and it took years to, you know, but it sort of fit in with my particular mindset and my life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So my whole life adapted to it.
Yeah.
You know, even before I had any success, it was sort of, you know, it's an unusual life.
Definitely.
But I don't know how to operate a real regular life.
No, neither do I. And so I've tried and I just, this doesn't happen. I don't know how to do it.
Yeah, I don't
know. I actually don't know how to fucking do it. And I've tried.
What, just to have a job?
Desperation, needing to pay rent, like being in extreme debt, thinking, get me out of this, like just even for a little bit. Like, how do I function? How does a normal person, I look at friends, I'm like, how do they do that? How do they, like how do
what?
I get into
how,
that? Like,
what,
how do I
get work?
Yeah, like, how do you do it? And I just don't know. I didn't find out.
But luckily, it worked out.
Luckily, it worked out.
Well, yeah, there's some bad times. But I mean, I imagine having those times, you know, after you've had tremendous success.
Yeah.
That's got to be the worst. Like for me, it was like a real slow build. Like, you know, I had some, like I've always been able to manage some sort of income in the world that I'm in.
Yeah.
But like it never fell out entirely where I made a bunch of money. Mm. But I've always thought it could.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it
I never spent. I know it. Okay.
Not even because of you. Like, you know what I mean?
It just
like,
goes away. See, I think about it all that time. Some people are going to steal my money.
Yeah, they can. Like, that happens to so many people.
What happened to you? So you do the first record. You're losing your mind. You buy a rabbit. You get magical. You turn into a vegan. Do you write? What happened? How do you make another record?
So I carry on like that with the second record for a while.
What do you mean? You were able to write the second record?
Yeah, I did. I booked like a shitty rehearsal room that I loved. And I just like wrote songs and I like... was like, I'm just going to find the fun in this again. But it kind of carried on, you know, same kind of vibe. And then by the end of that,
The record was similar?
No, the record wasn't similar, but I just felt like it was kind of like the pattern.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, write and then tour for 18 months.
Lose your mind.
Lose your mind, do it again. I'm like, this is my life. This is what happens. This is how it's always going to be.
And the money's coming in.
Yeah. Which I have no concept of either, because I'm fucking like 20. Like,
I mean. Yeah.
What? I don't even know. I didn't think about it.
I used to have more of a concept when I did it myself, but at some point you can't manage shit.
You can't.
And you hire somebody. And then
you
like,
really have no
hope
concept.
Hope those guys are good guys.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. I got to check and see how my money is.
Yeah.
And call the money guy.
I'll ask those guys. And then they could also just tell me what they want, I guess.
It seems like we should have a handle on it. But okay, so... How's the second album do?
So it doesn't do as well, but it's still like successful. You know, I'm still touring. I'm like, and then I like go through this like crazy relationship breakup. And I'm like,
what'd that guy do?
I had a very specific taste in like not being in healthy relationships with people that liked me really.
Let's explain that. Like,
I think like,
so you just end up with people that liked you as opposed to you liking them.
I ended up with a lot of people that liked drugs a lot more than they liked me, and like, didn't.
How'd that happen?
I don't know. I think I just like happens. I think if when you're young, you get into a relationship like that.
Are you a codependent person? An enabler?
I think, I don't know. I don't actually know. I think I just like, I met the first relationship I got in was like that. And then it like feels normal. And then you're just like, this is what a relationship is.
Me telling a guy to stop doing drugs.
Yeah.
That's how they work.
And then suddenly
and then
I was
he promises he will, and then you believe him.
And then
him.
He doesn't. And then you just like break down your self-esteem to like dirt, and then you rise like a phoenix.
Yeah, great. Without ever really being intimate.
Yeah.
It's a lot of drama.
It's completely a waste of time.
And you win at the end because you get out.
Right, if you get out, you win.
Yeah, great.
So that was fun. Uh-huh. Additional stress. But it was really freeing to like, you know, break up. And I sought out this producer, Tom Biller, who I love
so much.
He's a producer. He worked on like Liars records and like a War Paint record. And just he always did like different stuff.
I like War Paint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He had done like so many different types of things and it all sounded really good. And I just like asked to meet up with him and came to LA and like met with him. And I was like, I want to make a record with you. And then we just did. And
that was the third record?
Mm-hmm.
And it was different, right? Had a different sound, different vibe, different feel. It was like grown up or what?
It was like a bit more raucous. It was like, you know, more punky. Like,
who was in the band? Are you staying with the same musicians?
Like some of my musicians had left for stuff they had going on in their lives. And then I like fired everyone and I hired an all girl band.
Did you fire everyone like crazy firing? Like, were you crazy? Like,
I fired a lot of people. Yeah. Like a lot of people. Yeah. And
got a girl band together.
Yeah, it was like just time to go. Mm. Got this amazing girl band who's still like two of the girls are still with me now. They're just amazing. Linda Barato, Emma Hughes.
Is this when you moved here?
No, this was 2011. But this was my relationship with LA kind of beginning because I made the record here. I made it in Silver Lake in this mansion like that was a convent. That's where we were recording.
It was a convent mansion.
Yeah,
it wasn't like because I know Rick Rubin has a house that he records, and I think it used to be Charlie Chaplin's house or something, or somebody's house, or if somebody, you know, something more
this
dark.
This is one of
that.
Those famous ones as well. It's like
the convent?
It's like up on Michael Terena, and it's just amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's nice. It's a famous studio now, you mean?
There's like a lot of people, a lot of recordings have been done there.
Oh, okay.
And we made this record, and it was just like this amazing kind of wild ride. And then my label were coming out and saying, you know, we love it, da, da, da. And I like made all these videos, come home and I'm like ready to like do the whole thing again, and everyone's being kind of weird and I'm like, I don't know what's going on, like why aren't we kind of getting started? I've like gone through a couple managers at this point and I have this other manager now who's like being weird and
so everyone's kind of like, oh that tone,
something's happening,
the slightly high pitch, don't freak out.
The worst tone.
It's the worst.
And
no one told you.
Well, then I get a text. My manager's going to talk to my to like sign. You know, all we need to do is like sign the other part of the deal, which is like the pickup or whatever. You know, you get like signed for like five records, and each time they can decide whether they pick you up or throw you away.
Yeah.
And so then I get a text from my manager going back to LA because she's from LA, and she's like, "Yeah, they didn't pick it up, so you've been dropped, and I'm about to leave. I'm on a plane, so we'll talk.
Good luck."
And I'm like, "What?" I got dropped by my label by text, and my manager's like, turning my phone off now, bye. And I was like, cool.
The worst.
I remember just sitting on my sofa and being like, very frustrated right now.
So the record you just recorded had no home?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. So then I was angry.
Yeah.
Very angry. And that kind of fueled the whole journey because it was like,
but then they paid to record the fucking thing and then they didn't put it out?
No, I paid. I self-funded it because I was like, I want to make this now.
Oh.
And they hadn't like picked up the thing. So it's like a mixture of like me being like very headstrong and like needing to make the record then because I was like, I'm going to die if I don't make it now.
Yeah.
And then my managers being like, yeah, we'll just do this, we'll cover it, and like bad management and just kind of...
That's bad management. They let you spend your money?
Yes, yeah.
That's like, it seems to be rule one in management.
Right.
Like, let me figure out a way to make someone else pay for that.
Yeah. So so then I'd like spent all this money on the record and they weren't putting it out. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to fucking put it out then. And so I got distribution and put it out myself.
What do you mean you got distribution? You got released?
I just needed like a distributor because I
make
the record like produce
an aggregator.
Them and, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got that. And then we had like tours booked and I just like just went on the train and ride and just fucking rode the train till 2014.
So you did actual vinyl or you mean you needed somebody to release it?
Yeah, there was
vinyl.
Vinyl. both. Yeah, yeah. Like a distributor to
so
make
this
sure.
So it's more your money?
Yeah. Yeah.
So you dumped all your cash into
it.
Did you, and how, who, so, but you kept your manager.
It's funny. No, I fired her the week before my album came out.
So who, so no one's representing
you? So no one
you?
Managed me.
How'd you book the road gigs and shit?
I had my agents.
Oh,
I did have my agents.
Okay,
so I still had that.
All right.
And then, yeah, and then I got a new manager who kind of came in this chaotic time.
So you toured that record though?
Yeah.
The third one, Girls
yes,
Talk?
I played Lollapalooza and Coachella in 2014. Like that goes
that
right up
it.
To 2014.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But you went, so you did this record, you self-funded it and you got it together and then you toured, you ended up at Coachella, which is good.
Yeah, Lola was like the last gig we did.
Okay, and then you go back to England?
No, I went back to LA. I was like, I'm going to move to LA.
Oh, you just
that's
recorded.
When I decided
so you
to
recorded
to
in England, and you recorded here. You went back to England, and that's when they dropped you. And then you
yes,
came back.
Yes, and then I just kept coming back to LA, and it was like I'm going to be. Here. It just like felt like I needed to be here.
Yeah.
So I moved.
And that's where we start the story.
Chapter one.
Yeah, that was, and that's where everything.
That was like the pre.
So this is and so this is like this is where the documentary picks you up.
Yeah.
And the only thing that's still it seems like the only constant is the living bunny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so after that, you get a new manager. Now when yeah. do you, and the record sells or no? Does Girl Talk do
It does all right. I'm really proud of that. I was like, I feel like I kept afloat. That's how I felt
and you
afterwards.
Made
I was
your
like,
money back?
No. Hmm. But, well, then I signed a publishing deal. And so then I get money from that. So I'm like, okay, I feel secure. I'm financially secure. I invested in all this.
Publishing deal. And then you got people putting your stuff on movies and
so
TV
they,
shows.
Well, that's the goal.
Right.
So I get a big check of money to like live. And I'm like, yes, like yeah. I'm okay.
In
it's
LA.
All worth it. Yeah.
You moved.
Yes. And then I try and do this like bullshit like writing for other people thing. This is the worst thing anyone
What does that mean? Like through the publishing
it's
deal.
The sausage factory of the music industry. That's
right,
like why
right.
every song sounds the same.
So you pick
and
an artist
the same
and
writers.
You're gonna try
there's,
to...
there's like a board and it's like JoJo needs a song, Rihanna needs a song, and it's like here's you, like three producers and you two writers and go in and try and write melodies and everyone's like bickering over like
and you get that through the publishing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I hate that. It knocks my confidence like crazy. Ugh. Because it's not why I do music. It's not how I make music. It's not how I write. It's like
trying to hit the
it's
goal.
It's like, here's a metaphor. Here's a mushroom.
Right.
Let's come up with a bunch of like love metaphors and breakup metaphors about this mushroom. And then like build like the this has to be this many lines. This is the pre. This is the chorus. Here's the bridge. And then and it's like a formulaic like.
Yeah.
I hated it so much.
But if you nail one, you can make some money. That's what they're looking for.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. If you get so-and-so to do the song. It's always been like that.
Yes.
Write a song.
Yeah. 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 But you really have to get like a song like. You know, it has to be like Justin Bieber because I wrote a song for like Rita Ora and it was like, that didn't really get any money. Like, you know, it has to be like big.
Right.
And it was just like my self-esteem's going down.
Broke your spirit.
Yeah. And I've like got into another shit relationship.
With another drug addict?
Yeah.
Would
and
you
like,
just pick the nodding guy at the club?
Like, oh God, yeah. And like, I'm in the music industry. There's a lot of them out there. That's kind of like my colleagues.
Uh-huh.
So it's all like self-esteem. I didn't even realize my self-esteem's going down and down and down. And I'm like, not really realizing it. And then I get into this humongous monetary dispute with a manager.
One of the old ones?
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
The one that
first,
came in.
Second or
the
third
one that
one.
Came, the third, like, probably like the fifth, but the one that came in.
Oh, after you fired the one that texted you and then got on the plane?
Yeah.
So the fourth one or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it just, you know, is like all my money's gone.
What was the money? Was it tour money? What money?
It was my personal income had depleted hugely for mysterious reasons, Mark.
Really?
Yes.
And you had to go to court?
Yeah, but it was like three. I mean, I went to court when we were like, I mean, I don't know what year that was, but it went on for a long time. And I moved home. I couldn't pay rent. I moved home. I had no money. That's when I like had
moved
that moment.
Back to England?
I moved back to England.
2014 or 15?
Yep. I sold my house in London. It's like I had nothing. I had to deal with this like tax bill on the publishing and it's all gone. And there's like, I'm like really...
tapped.
Yeah. And then I fire the guy. I fire my manager. And
you sold your house?
Yeah. I've like got nothing.
To get even?
I sell my house to pay the tax bill on the publishing deal.
But are you out of debt?
No. I'm like, I've got nothing. I'm fucked then because I haven't even got like my asset of my house.
So you move back in with your mother?
So I move back in with my mom. I remember the worst day where I'm like lying on my bed. I was lying on my sister's bed. I was in my sister's room. So I'm and I'm just really still. And I just remember being like, I just need to be really still right now. I can't like tip. Nothing can tip over right now. Okay, everything has to stay really still. My mom comes in. She was like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "I just need to be alone right now. I just need to be really still. Like, please don't ask me any questions." She's like, "Okay, I'm just gonna lie here." And I just like froze, and I like couldn't go any. I couldn't. I just like stayed there.
Paralyzed.
Yeah, paralyzed. Paralyzed.
So worse.
Yeah, it was. It's bad because like with the guttural emotion, you're like moving, but this was like, I can't go there. I just need to like keep everything still, so I just stay here.
How long did you stay there? A week?
Yes, and then I mean, I fucking auditioned for Glow, and a month later, I'm back in LA.
Oh my god! So
and Glow saves my fucking life.
Did you spin out like in LA though? When before you moved?
Oh, it was terrible. It was terrible. It was months of like lying on the floor, phone calls with business managers, phone calls with lawyers, phone calls with like trying to make this person responsible, trying to get my money back, trying.
Did you come unraveled?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
So you lost it and you went home.
It was fucking terrible. But it was.
Okay, so then you home, you're on the bed.
I look at myself, okay, in the dock, and I like don't know. I'm like, that person looks so different to me. And it's like the stress that you carry through that shit is like, it's in my arm. It's like the way I walk. It's like everything's like off. And then at the end of the movie, it's kind of like, oh, there I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, it's lucky. See, that's good that you, but your mom must have been helpful in a way.
I'm so lucky I have a family. I mean, yeah. I was never going to end up on the streets. Like, I have a family who would take me in and like.
And they're not, like, they were probably always a little hesitant about show business anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Right? Yeah. My mom, like, doesn't give a fuck if I do this or not for, like, her sake. She, like, wants me to do whatever I want to do and be happy. And actually, this world terrifies her for, like, very sensible reasons.
Yeah. So you were there. And you went home and then you auditioned for Glow while you were in England?
Yeah, I do a tape for Jen Euston.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I need this. This is mine.
Did you make another rabbit deal?
I just like, oh God, I don't know. I just felt like I needed.
I won't need it all if you let me get Glow.
I knew it was mine.
That's so great.
Yeah.
And then there we
were. I knew it was mine. And then fucking a month later, I'm in a fucking ring learning how to wrestle. And that's kind of what builds my confidence is like around these amazing women. And we learn to wrestle together.
Yeah.
And like, fuck me. Like that is one way to deal with shit.
I remember like the first season, like, you know, when everyone was getting to know each other. Weren't you going through, didn't you have another dude?
Right. Well, that carried on for a little longer than it should have. Yeah. So.
Oh, that was the dude from when you lost your shit? Same dude?
Yeah.
Because I remember that was a problem for a while.
Yeah.
Didn't he? I think he came to set once, didn't he?
Oh, God!
Okay.
Yes, it was a problematic relationship that went on way longer than it should
have. I'm getting him confused, though, because Mariana brought some dude.
Oh, yeah.
That dude, that hairy dude. Was yours a hairy dude?
No. Okay. That was Mariana's.
Yeah.
There was a few dodgy Glow dudes around for the first season, for sure. And I think, honestly, like, that the confidence I gained from the show
Yeah.
gave me the confidence to, like, go, I need to be treated better, you know, like, and I am going to like stop this pattern.
Yeah, I think it seemed like the show worked that way for a lot of people.
God, it changed,
in among you women.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, it, you know, it was good for me. You know, I was happy to have the gig, but I definitely saw some sort of sisterhood evolving where a lot of people were going through some rough times. I mean, it seemed like you were like, and I guess Kia has, you know, her problems with, you know, physical problems and whatnot, but like, but there was definitely stuff going on in that community over near those trailers.
Glow Alley.
Yeah. Where I'd kind of walk by, I'm like, all right, well, they're talking. Hope everything's okay over there. You know?
Yeah.
So, all right. So then did you just consciously kind of not, because you had the gig, did you consciously sort of like not pressure yourself to make more music, or where were you at with that?
So yeah, I focused on that. And then after Glow season one finished, I was like, okay, I'm going to put out this record that I've been like unravelly making over these however many years I was like frozen in time for, which was like three years or whatever. And I piece it all together and I make an album. And then I just like spent those however many months we're like not doing Glow, I do a Kickstarter campaign.
Like five or six months, right? Yeah. Or no, like, we'd shoot for like 3.5-4 months, and then until we do press, you know, there's, you know, definitely 5 or 6 months.
So I toured, I got back on the road, got back in the van.
In Europe?
Yeah. America. I did a tour in America.
How was the draw?
Good. Yeah. Good. Really good.
So that's nice that didn't get sad.
I'm very lucky that I have a fan base who like sticks by me through everything.
That's great.
And I've toured a lot over the years of like however many fucking years I've been doing this, like 13 years.
And you're going out with new material now? Yeah. Oh, that's so good that you're not showing up and you're like, well, we had to go to a smaller place.
Well, it's like the thing about the reality of like the middle class of the working of the music industry is like some days you're in big venues and some days you're in tiny venues.
I know, it's the same with comedy. Yeah.
It's like, you know, right. I think that that's something that really needs to be admitted and out there is like some days you are playing to like 3,000 people and sometimes you're playing to like not many people and you're like trying to, that's kind
but
of.
But not many, like what does that mean to you? Are you talking 40 or are you talking
not
200?
Not 40, like 200. Yeah, yeah. Right.
Right.
But you go in and out of that. Like, it's always a battle to, like, keep drawing people in because there's so much out there. And, like,
and you have just to get them to know you're going to be in town.
The amount of times I've been, like, blasting it on social media and then I play in Denver and the next day someone comments, when are you coming to Denver? And I'm like, fuck you!
I don't know if those people are doing that on purpose, but I get that too. It's like, do I need
What is that?
I don't know, but I...
Is it like a mess up in the algorithm?
But it's so funny, I have the same anger. Like, you know, somehow so it's annoying. Their fault. Yeah. It's like I did everything I could other than call you. So I can't, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Pay attention. I don't know, I've been announcing it on my show for 3 months. Yeah. Not my fault.
That's so good that you can do that though, announce all your stuff on here.
Yeah, but still, you still get people. I don't know when you come and do, you know.
They right don't pay after, attention.
But you do get mad at them and it's not really, it's like, what the fuck kind of fan are you?
Are you an idiot?
Yeah. What do I got to do?
Yeah.
So, well, that's good that they stayed with you. So over the 2 or 3 seasons of Glow, you're able to, you know, run this material and then finally lay it down, huh?
Yeah. And I mean, I just toured like this summer in England at festivals and we had amazing shows. And I guess like I'm finally at this clearing where I've like dealt with all the like years of the shit that's been going on. Mm-hmm. And now I feel I'm like, okay, I can kind of decide what I want to do now.
Did you get on your feet financially and everything?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, with Glow, and then we've got one more season. It's nice that we know that we've got this season, but it's also nice to know it's the last one, as opposed to like waiting every year.
Right.
You know, kind of half ending it every year.
Oh, God. Yeah, yeah.
And then just sort of like, well, if we didn't get another one, that's okay to end there.
Yeah.
But now they can really end it
You know they're going to end it right.
I think so. I have no idea how I even fit in anymore. I'm making a movie with my daughter. I don't know what. How does everyone come back together?
They're going to figure it out.
All right. I know they will.
Yeah. I know what you mean. I'm like, I feel it's very emotional, Glow.
Well, I know, but like, what's going to happen with you and Bash?
I know.
How does that?
What's going to happen?
I don't know. I think maybe he comes out fully.
Do you think? I think Rhonda would accept him.
Yeah.
I feel like he could. He should. I hope he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, are they going to end it where we all get different jobs? You know, like, you know what I mean? Like, there's like one more wrestling thing, and then we all
separate.
And then they cut to, maybe the last episode is just like 10 years from now.
Oh my god! I hope that we also do a Glow movie in like 20 years.
Right. Well, you know, we do have that option. Mm. Like they, because it's the '80s, you can literally they can do an episode. Yeah. The last episode could be us 5 years down the line
yeah, yeah.
in 1992 or three.
It's so crazy to think of it being over because it's been such a huge, like, life-saving thing in so many ways. Yeah. You know,
it happens in a weird space for me because last season I was sort of off on my own.
Mm, yeah.
And I wasn't
yeah.
shooting as much. So it was sort of, it happened in sort of a dream state.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And then when I saw it, I'm like, oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't even remember it happening. Also, I was so skinny. I lost all that weight. And then I'm like, how come no one asks if Sam has cancer?
Oh, my God.
He looks so skinny.
Because you're on a diet.
I know. But I just wanted to lose a few pounds so I didn't get fat during the show. And then it felt so good to lose the weight.
And so you just kind of got into it.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I feels good, that control thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so... this record is out now. Did a label yeah. do this or did you do it?
No, this is me.
Oh, so, yeah. And that works for you, huh? And it's selling okay?
At the moment, yeah. Yeah, it's, I feel like that's what I mean, like at this new place where I'm like,
yeah,
you know, what do I do next? Do I do another record on my own? I can do that. And I'm just yeah. like, I feel so like.
Who produced it?
Multiple people, actually, because this was like a sort of scrap heap record.
Yesterday was forever.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a picture of you, looks like Joshua Tree.
Yeah, it was in Joshua front. Tree. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's this guy, Jared?
Jared is awesome. I did like a few songs with him.
Who's he?
He lived in LA and we just did session. We got put together on like a very annoying like writing camp thing. And then we just clicked.
A writing camp?
Yeah.
Who put you, what do you mean?
Like those like Sausage Factory things where you're like,
Yeah.
But then we just like liked each other and we're both not really liking that world. And we just kind of went to I went to his house and he has a studio there and we just uh-huh. wrote songs together and it was really fun. And so he was a huge relief during that period of time.
Because that's nice. I don't know this whole world of people with one name.
Jared Krittstein is his name.
Uh-huh. But he's credited as Jared K?
Oh yeah, probably just to fit him in.
And what about, oh, is that all?
Yeah.
And who's Ty? T-H-A-A-E. Who's that guy?
Oh, Frederick, the savior of like that period of time. Really,
how do you say his name?
Frederick Toe.
Toe, okay.
So he's I got introduced with one of the many thousand managers I've had. Got introduced to him. And we just, like I love working with him.
He's a producer.
Yeah, and he's just like of the same background as me with like, I hate to say this, but like real music, you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And we just have like really good studio chemistry and we'll like do a song in like 4 hours and have the best time. And
yeah.
He became, during that period of time, was a fucking like safe place for me to go and just like write music.
Yeah.
And do what I loved and kind of helped me find that again, that great. I actually loved it, you know? Uh-huh. Because it's a very like self-destructive thing when the thing that you like care about the most in the world and then do most of your life, adult life is the only thing I've ever
yeah.
done.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it gets destroyed and you don't know if you're ever going to be able to do it again. And you also don't really know like who you are and what you think and how to have the confidence to, you don't even think you're good anymore. And
there's
like,
worst.
Oh my God, it's like so, it not having like purpose like that. Was like the most loss I've ever felt in my life. Like,
yeah, and I guess with, like, it's probably easier for that to happen with music, you know, than it is for like what I do. Even though it's still self-generated, you know, you're kind of beholden to your past success and also, you know, and styles of the moment.
And now I feel like it's so hard for, you know, bands now, like. I'm so lucky that I have that Made of Bricks
yeah.
success.
Yeah.
Because having like a platinum record and a Brit Award and like, you know, a number one record in my history
yeah.
has like always been there.
Right.
It's always there. It's yeah, like an accolade yeah, yeah. I always carry and that helps right. like.
Give you some gravitas.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I worry for the bands that don't get that or have that. And I think.
I don't know what they do.
It's fucking hard, man.
Believe me, I get a lot of records from people who are just, you know, they yeah. got a dream and they're putting it out there.
Yeah.
It's a matter of like, how do you get someone to pick it up? How do you get someone to come to Denver?
Yeah. It's
like, how is someone going to be like, oh, this is great?
Yeah.
Because it just, there is so much out there. But there it looks is. Like, but that, I'm glad that you did this.
Thank you.
And we're going to start shooting when, in February?
Who knows? Yeah. February?
I heard it was February.
I heard the rumor. Yeah.
What'd you, is that what you heard?
Yeah, I think that that's what people said from the last, right?
Yeah, I think so. Because I mean, I got cleared to do something in January. So,
oh, great. You know, oh, that's good.
Yeah, so it must be after
So we
that.
Might.
Unless they haven't told me yet. My manager's going to tell me something and then say, I got to go. You're not in the season. You're in one
text
episode.
You, yeah, and then get on a plane.
Have a fatal heart attack in episode one. I got to go.
Do you think any of us are going to die?
I hope not.
Oh, God.
That'd be terrible.
Yeah. Not in real life, but, you know.
We're all going to die.
In real life, we know we're going
to
die.
Yeah, but I don't think we need to do that on the show.
No.
Do we? It's a bus accident where we all go.
It would be cool if we all just like fly off and explode.
Yeah,
like
great.
The end of
like
the
Challengers.
Yeah.
Like the Challenger explosion. That's terrible. That was so brutal.
Yeah.
All right, so now you got a new boyfriend. Is he unlike the others?
Yes. He's a nice person.
Okay, good.
Very good person.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's growth.
I did grow.
You seem to.
Very happy.
Self-producing, growth.
Yeah.
Grounded.
Yeah.
Know who you are again.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And if people want to see the documentary of you unraveling, what's that called again?
Underestimate the Girl.
Yeah, go watch that because she's a lot better now. How does that end, that documentary?
Well, it goes right up until Glow.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was shooting till Glow, yeah.
So if you want more detailed visuals of what we've discussed today, you can go watch that. And the new record is out on all the platforms.
It's out there.
On all the places you get records.
Everywhere you can find music, it'll be there waiting for you.
Yesterday Was Forever. Go back and listen to the evolution.
Yeah, yeah. And wait for what's to come.
Nice ending. Nice talking to you, Kate.
Thank you.
See, quite the roller coaster ride for Kate there. But I'm glad you landed on her feet. It's great working with her. Her latest album, Yesterday Was Forever, is available wherever you get music. You can also watch her in all three seasons of Glow, streaming now on Netflix. And now I will play guitar for you and take a nap. Okay, Boomer.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.